All right, everybody, you can gather your seats. Take a seat, please, if you like. We're about to get started here. We appreciate everybody being here with us tonight. We have you, hopefully, for the next 3 hours or so. If you can hold your attention for a Friday night, we have a lot of things we'd like to share with you tonight. And I'm going to tell you a little bit about the tour, where then we're going to hear from some of our local friends from the House of J who are doing some good work here. Those of you who are looking to plug in with other activist groups, this is the place, this is the time. And then we're going to hear a meditation and a talk from Miriam, for those of you who understand the importance of mental and spiritual health right now with everything we're facing. Then we'll be hearing from John Bush, from Ramiro, and I'll be giving a talk. So we have about 3 hours of programming tonight. I hope you guys can stick around. Again, we've just spent the last 8 weeks, myself and Miriam, Ramiro for about 3 weeks of the stops, John for a few of the stops. And as you can see, the tour is called the Activation Tour. We decided that it was worth leaving our home for 2 months, being on the road, stressed out, spending money, time, energy, traveling the country to try to connect with people like you guys here. Now, of course, we're from Houston, from this area, so we're hoping we can really connect and plug in with more people here, because for the last 8 weeks as we've been traveling, we've been in events and there's 150, 100, 70, 80 people at every city. Sometimes smaller, but mostly much bigger, and which is a good thing. And the beautiful thing I'll say about it, and you'll hear me emphasize this throughout the night, is that it's really been, I think, the most truly diverse, not in the sort of fake diversity, inclusivity way that we're taught, but in a truly diverse way. Every city we visited, we've had a wide range of ages. We've had folks as old as 94 years old to 5 months old. Every skin color you can think of, people who say, I'm a Democrat, but I don't fit in with these people, or I'm a former Trump supporter, or I'm a conservative, I'm an anarchist, I'm apolitical, I don't put labels on myself, everything in between. And it's been really beautiful to see, because so much of the propaganda over the last year and a half that we're going to talk about tonight, we're going to talk about the solutions, so much of that propaganda is designed to make the people in this room and the people watching at home to feel like they're a right-wing extremist, right? To try to put us all in this little box and dismiss us, because if you believe in these ideas, you must be obviously crazy or an extremist. But out in reality, away from the COVID paranoia, away from the propaganda, there are many, many people. And now in the last weeks, you guys are seeing it. Doctors, teachers, nurses, police, firefighters, all pushing back in different parts of the country, in different parts of the world, saying that they don't want to submit to mandates and vaccine passports and things of that sort. That's what we're here to talk about tonight. We're going to describe throughout the night some of the vision of what we're facing. I'll mainly focus on what we're facing, but we are going to put a heavy emphasis on what we can do about it, because solutions seem more needed than probably ever right now. And this is something else I'll emphasize throughout the night. I don't think knowing things are bad is good enough anymore, if it ever was good enough. You can know things are bad, you can talk about it, you can watch the shows and listen to the podcasts and still march right into this vision they have. Maybe you guys have heard of it. It's called the Great Reset. Maybe you've heard of the term, you'll own nothing and be happy. We'll talk more about that vision tonight, and we're going to offer an alternative to that.
Man, this guy's a total badass. Give it up for Derek Bros, ladies and gentlemen. I've known Derek for 10 years now, and I've always been inspired by the dude. You know, back in the day, I was doing all sorts of activism and just going at it 10x with all the activism.
Before him?
Before him, yeah. Yeah. And then I had kids and realized I was freaking dirt poor. And I was like, man, I could do that, the starving activist thing on my own. But now that I got two mouths to feed, this kind of sucks. So I pulled back and I started feeling really anxious. I was like, man, I need to be there on the front lines. Got a lot to say. I want to help the cause of freedom. But I consciously was like, you know what? Motherfucker Derek Bros is out there just killing it. And his message is so on point, mixed in that spirituality too. Ah. That helped me to feel at ease. And now he's just, man, he's just like, how many documentaries is this guy doing? Where does he get time for that stuff? What's going on here? He's got this lovely lady in empowerment, and now she's speaking and doing all this cool stuff too, and guiding us through meditation and dropping all this wisdom. So super excited to know you guys, super inspired to be a part of this community. Let's give it up for Derek Rose, ladies and gentlemen.
All right. Thank you guys for being here. So we timed this from 6 to 10 p.m. It's 8:30 now. You still with us? Still awake? I want to do a couple of mentions before we go further. Just one thing for those who are here tonight, we appreciate you.
being here. As I was saying earlier, this tour, we sort of, every city we're visiting, we're doing this sort of main evening event, the meditation, the talks, and the music. I'm going to perform some music in a bit, but it's also a two-part component. Sometimes when we arrive to a city, we will show up, we'll go out, and a couple of days in Atlanta, we fed the houseless. We cleaned up a park in Seattle and a few other places. Sometimes we've gone out and done outreach, passing out flyers about vaccine passports and vaccine mandates. We've done urban farming workshops, community gardening work, all kinds of different things like this in every city we visit. So we just arrived to Houston literally right before the event from Orlando. We had our event on Wednesday. We're back home now. This is the end of the tour. But tomorrow is the second day, and I want to invite all of you to participate. Those of you who want to continue your involvement, tomorrow morning at 9 a.m., we're going to be cleaning up a cemetery. If you want to get more details, please talk to Apple/Reba. You want to raise your hand real quick. She's helped organize that in the morning. If you want to come, just get involved. This is just, of course, us trying to show that we need to lead by example. If we want to take care of the world, take care of our communities, we need to do it ourselves, not wait around for other people to do it. So that's the first part. And then in the afternoon from 2 p.m. to about 5 p.m., we're going to be having a march. We're calling it the Houston March for Unity and Truth. And I would love to see all of you there. If you want to come out, we're going to be peacefully marching, meeting at Bagby Park, not far from here, and marching over towards Allen Parkway. And yeah, we're going to have some speeches. There'll be different groups involved. And I'll tell you guys, since you're here now, but those who are showing up tomorrow will get a surprise. We paid to have this plane flying over downtown Houston from 2 to 4 p.m. tomorrow. It's going to say, no vax mandate, join us, freedomcells.org. And it's going to be fun. Thank you. It's going to be flying down Allen Parkway around downtown for 2 hours tomorrow. So make sure to ask your friends to take a look over there. So we're doing a lot of different things. And I invite you, if you came tonight, please continue to get involved. The other thing is, you know, I'm about to share about an hour worth of information with you guys and some solutions to kind of expand on what John has said, and Ramiro has said, and what Miriam has said. But besides us sharing what we have to share, you guys know I'm from Houston. We're from Houston, but we live in Mexico now. In a week and a half, we're going back to Mexico. But the rest of you who live in different parts of the city, I know some of y'all live in Houston, others different kind of suburban areas. You guys are the ones that have to continue the work here, right? We have friends that are visiting from Dallas and from some other places tonight. But ultimately, those of you who feel committed to Houston or Katy or Sugar Land or whatever particular area you're coming from are the ones that need to connect. So I want to just again, if you want to get involved more, I invite you to connect with Reba. Please raise your hand again if you feel like standing up for a second. Yeah, stand up for just a Shireen. Shireen as well. Becky's with Freedom Matters Action Group. These are people who are local, who are very active, as well as Natalie. She's got her table right here with her goods. She's back in the back of the room. Please connect with these people. Get to know people. If you're looking around the room and you don't really know the other folks here and you feel like you're staying in the city or the surrounding areas, these are the people you need to connect with, the people who gave a crap enough to come out on a Friday night and be at an event like this, right? If you're looking for active people, you're looking to connect with other people, these are the people here. So please, we'll try to make time for that networking at the end. And then I am going to perform my music. So let's go ahead and just dive right into it. This talk that I'm giving is called This Is What We're Facing and This Is What We Can Do About It. We should have done this much earlier. I apologize. It's going to be just a moment of shuffling. But before we go further, I am going to need all the vaccinated on this side and the unvaccinated on this side. All right. So far, no compliance, and it's the end of the tour. So thankfully, no one around the country has moved when I said that. Obviously, I'm joking, right? But I'm joking about a reality that we're dealing with that's happening in this world. And we're going to dive into that. We're going to talk about what we're facing. As I said, we're going to really emphasize what we can do about it. But I do want to provide a little bit of background for those who might be here on the invitation of a friend or not really sure how you got here or what you're in for, about why we're doing this event. You know, it's called the Activation Tour. My website is called The Conscious Resistance, the books. Sometimes holistic activism or holistic anarchism. You know, we incorporate meditation, things like that. Maybe you're not really sure why we do that or what it has to do with fighting against vaccine passports and vaccine mandates. So I'm going to try to make that make a little more sense to you by sharing a bit about myself for those who might not be familiar. So most of you know me because for the last 12 years, I've been working as an activist and a journalist here in the city. I'm 36 now. I started doing this 23, 24, started waking up when I was living literally just down the street from here, read a book from that Barnes & Noble down the street, picked up a copy of Endgame from Alex Jones, heard Ron Paul speak at U of H, not you know far from here, and things were never the same. And my journey very much kind of started around here and started getting connected with some of the people here in the spiritual community, in the activist community, and started an activist group called the Houston Freethinkers that some of you might remember that was around for a number of years, very active. We did everything from protests, rallies, marches, confronting politicians, confronting police, building community gardens, hosting skill shares, music event, art events, I mean, anything we could think of to really try to get people active. And our whole goal was really not even just let's go out and protest, but try to build a culture, like a movement. To me, especially living in here around this area where there's a lot of 20, 30 something, just going to the bar every weekend, being jaded, not paying attention to what's going on in the world around them, who could really give a crap less about whatever you're talking about. And myself and Micah and some other people, we'd go out there to the cheap drink nights and try to talk to people about the world. And it was a fun process. And it was beautiful, though. We did so much, you know, there's so many things that I'm proud of in that time. One of the main things is through the effort of the Houston Freethinkers and other activists here, we helped Houston become the only city in the country, and this is still to this day, to kick the TSA off the buses. You know, you might know the TSA for groping you at the airports, but in 2012, they announced this program that said anybody in the city of Houston who chose to ride public transportation would be subject to random bag searches, ID checks, and drug sniffing dogs. So ourselves and, you know, a few hundred activists rallied together, went to the Metro board meeting, and within 2 weeks, they shut down the entire program. Thank you. And yeah, that was, you know, one of those moments of like, holy crap, we just did that. Like, we actually did have an impact. And we didn't go beg the government, please stop doing this. We went to the corporation directly into their board meeting, which is typically, I'm thinking, a stuffy boardroom that nobody's ever there. Because who the heck goes to a public meeting of the Metro Board, you know, corporation? Well, when they did that, we filled it with about 200 people 2 weeks in a row. And they were just like, all right, we don't even want to deal with this. We'll end it, right? So we had some impact. And it was also around this time that I started to realize just how much of a crappy job the media does. Because we had that event. We got covered by, interviewed by the local media. Some ways they tried to misrepresent our opinions. We had another situation where one of our festivals, our music festivals for the community, police showed up based on a false, you know, noise complaint. They ended up arresting me. They, you know, threw Micah against the car. We had this whole crazy thing happen. And then a cop pulled out a shotgun on 100 unarmed people and pulled it and said, get back now, and pointed it at them. They arrested me, took me to jail. We got it all on camera. When I got out of jail the next day, we put it into a video, put it out there, sent out a press release. And within 10 minutes, all the news was at my house to do an interview with me. And then by that, it was the top story everywhere. HPD had to make a statement, respond to it. They did an investigation. Surprise, surprise. They said they didn't do anything wrong. But that night when they all ran the news stories, the articles and the videos, wouldn't you know it, after being all friendly in our faces, they said we were a drunk mob of people surrounding the cops and that, you know, we were the aggressors. And just, it was for me kind of an awareness of, okay, so this is how this works. I know things are corrupt, but this is how it works even on the local level. And that was the beginning of me wanting to get into journalism. And really, I think at the beginning, I didn't really know what to make of it. I didn't go to school for journalism. I just started putting cameras in, you know, the mayor's faces and the police chief's faces and realizing that, hey, when I'm here with my little handheld camera shaking, trying to ask a serious question, and you got all the mainstream news with their million-dollar cameras, and none of them will ask a single question because they want to be invited to the galas and the banquets and the dinners and the inside club. And when I would ask the question, you know, they would treat me like I was doing something wrong. But it really honestly just encouraged me. I sort of get a thrill to watching politicians run when I ask them questions. It's been fun. I mean, I think it really shatters the paradigm, right? They like to live in this bubble that, like, they're so much different and better than all of us. We, you know, these politicians, we should praise them or whatever. And they're surrounded by people who are yes men and women to them, who just fill their, you know, blow smoke up their ass or whatever, right? And then they get into a bubble where somebody just pierces through that and says, here's a question. And they don't even, like, what? A short circuit. They don't even know how to think, right? So I started to have fun with this, and I started to realize I have a knack for this. I like to investigate. I like to research. And thankfully, along the way, I've been able to make a living with it. I currently write for the website The Last American Vagabond, Ryan Christian. Some of you guys might know Ryan's work. And I still have a show on 90.1 KPFT here in Houston, even though I'm not living here. We still do that show. I've, as John said, produced a number of different documentaries, Bringing Down Jeffrey Epstein, The 5G Trojan Horse, currently working on a 16-part documentary series called The Pyramid of Power that some of you, I think, might enjoy. You can find it at thepyramidofpower.net. I've written 5 books, some that are here. You know, I've just been doing this work over the last 12 years, trying to think of any way I can to get people thinking and in questioning the world. Ultimately, it's sort of a strategy like this. I use my journalism to say, hey, look at this crazy thing. Did you guys know about this? You see this thing happening? And then through my talks and the books and the more philosophical stuff, say, now here's some things we can do about it, right? Let's not just obsess over the problem, but let's see what are the steps we can take. And it's been a beautiful journey. This has allowed me to get to the point now where we can do a 29-city tour across the country and people volunteer to come help us make it happen. And I mean, it really has been the most humbling 2 months of my life, I can say. Like, just everywhere we've been going, not even just people saying thank you individually for my work, but for the Greater Reset, for the Freedom Zone Network, people who are buying land with people they met through the Freedom Zone Network, people who are pulling their kids out of school with people they met through the Freedom Zone Network, people who are pulling their money out of the banks, they're growing food together. The people who are taking things most seriously and being the most proactive are having success. Those who want to keep talking and sharing political news or just arguing about viruses will probably continue to do those things until they feel threatened again. But I guess the reason we're here tonight, and the reason I'm sharing this story, is I know that many of you know my activism and the things I've been doing. You understand the value of that, but that's part of my awakening journey. But I feel like for me, really, the way I got here to be with you guys tonight, talking about how to get activated, started about 5 years before that. I was 20 years old and I got addicted to crystal meth and I went to prison. When I was in January 2005, I tried crystal meth for the first time, and it was pretty much just a 10-month, 11-month crash to the bottom and then a little bit lower. You know, I ended up homeless, living in a crack house, meth house. I had to get myself sober, thankfully, and I got out of that world. But I was still kind of, you know, I still had friends in that world, and I needed to make some money, and I knew I could do one more deal, one of those kind of stereotypical one more deals, right? And I got arrested, 20 years old, a week before I turned 21. And it was in that space, November 2005, when I got my sentence, and I really felt powerless. You ever had a situation where you're truly powerless? Like, I mean, whatever it is you're dealing with, you can call husband, wife, boyfriend, girlfriend, mom, dad, lawyer, friend, whatever, and maybe they can kind of listen and be there for you. But ultimately, you have to live it. There's nothing, you know, there's nothing that's going to take this away, right? And it's one thing when you're out here, it's kind of interesting. When you're in jail, we refer to this place as the free world. I'm kind of wondering if we should rethink that. But when you're here in the free world, or the free-ish world, let's say, you have Netflix to distract you, and the internet, and, you know, just whatever. You could drink yourself to distractions. You could just watch TV. There's all kinds of ways, even when you're feeling that powerlessness, that pain, to try to avoid it if you want to. But being in prison, being locked up, getting there, and recognizing, looking at the calendar, and the earliest I'm going home is 11 months from now. That's the absolute earliest I'm going to be seeing anywhere outside of this place, you know, besides where they tell me I can go. And I can cry, I can complain, I can get on the phone and cry to my girlfriend, my mom, my lawyer, but nobody's getting me out of here. That feeling of just having to accept that, not only, I mean, it felt very powerless at first, but it's also where I found my strength. And I really, that was the beginning of me starting to figure out, like, how did I get here? And what am I, you know, I need to figure this out. And I very clearly saw this kind of, these two paths that I could go. One of the paths was what I'll call a path of family tradition, because in both sides of my family, my mother's side and my father's side, drug abuse, alcohol abuse, and prison are very prominent. And so this is something that I grew up seeing. My uncle, my father, some of my earliest memories are visiting my father in prison and seeing him, you know, kind of navigating that 4, 5, 6, 7 years old, whatever, trying to understand, why do we have to go see him behind razor wire? Why does he have a black eye? How come I only get to see him for an hour? You know, just trying to understand all that. And I remember being a very sad little kid. You know, I definitely remember starting to have suicidal thoughts at a young age. And that sadness eventually turned into anger when I got to become a teenager. And it was sort of like the way that I protected myself, this whole dark side, right, that Star Wars talks about. You think you're covered, you know, you're stronger now, but really you're just masking whatever you're trying to hide from. But at that time, when I turned 14, it was one more time that he had gotten out of prison. He'd made some promises he was going to be there. And sure enough, within 48 hours, he was already on the way back to prison. That was sort of the cycle that had been happening in my young life. And I remember the moment that happened, staring into the mirror and just saying, you know, F this, like, I'm never going to let anybody hurt me again, and just becoming destructive. So I was a smart kid. I was in all advanced classes. I ended up graduating high school early, went into college early, but nobody knew that about me. They knew me as the kid that was throwing chairs at teachers, getting arrested, getting in fights. And I just didn't know how to handle all this stuff, right? I didn't really have the tools or the way to kind of navigate forward to graduating out of high school. Going into college early, living with my brother, hanging out with his friends, started drinking all the time. Sooner or later, that I was the drunk guy at all the parties, puking everywhere. And this was a 2-year cycle of, okay, I'm drunk all the time. Now I'm pilled out all the time. Now I'm on ecstasy all the time. Then I tried crystal. Within 10 months, I was locked up. It was just this sort of chaotic 2-year period leading to me getting locked up. Now, with hindsight, of course, I can clearly see like the path of this. But at this time, when I'm 20 years old, just turning 21, locked up, looking at the calendar, I'm not going home till next year. None of this was clear yet. I was just like, I need to figure this out. And so I started journaling every day. I started just writing my thoughts down and really thinking about, like, how did I get here? What is this process that brought me to this place, right? And then one day and when you're locked up, they you know, you get to read the Chronicle while you're in Houston. And I was reading the Chronicle on the weekend, and on the weekend they have a religious section, and it quotes from like the Bible, the Torah, the Quran, and different traditions. And it quoted from the Dhammapada, the Buddhist Bible. And it was just a couple of verses that I really wish I remembered, because the story, every time I tell it, would be so much better if I said, and this is what I read. But I don't remember it. But it was really epic. And I started to get family and friends to send me books on meditation and prayer. And just, it was kind of the beginning of my spiritual journey of starting to like, okay, I'm going to figure out what is in here. Why was I trying to stick up as many drugs up my nose as possible? What was I really looking for? For a while, I thought drugs were the key to enlightenment. Doesn't take long to figure out, not so much. And yeah, so I'm in this space just knowing I'm not going home. I start journaling every day, start meditating. And I think that's probably one of the strongest, the most needed places in prison, because it is a lot of fear. There's a lot of ego in there. Definitely a lot of fear, people putting on and masking again the fear as ego. And yeah, and it was in that space I just started doing that healing journey and started to understand these things that now with 17 years reflection, I can kind of say, oh, wow, I see what happened to me, right? So between 2005 and 2008, I did 19 months in Texas state institutions. I did 11 months, got out for 5, went back for 3. I was, you know, figuring it out and I was starting the healing, right? And so I got out October 2008, about a month before Obama became elected, which was a really interesting time to be emerging to the world because I was not very political. I knew enough not to trust the government, but I didn't know anything else beyond that other than, man, people really love this guy. They either think he's going to be the savior of the world or he's the Antichrist. Turns out he was just another warmonger president. But it was an interesting time to be coming into the world because I was now a felon here living in Houston. You can't get a job here. You can't get rented here. People hear you're a felon. They might make certain judgments or assumptions about you that must mean you're a violent, dangerous person or whatever that means, right? And I just want to say it's interesting, right? Because this never comes up in the reality that I've created for myself now. I've never had anybody say, hey, before you make a documentary for me or write an article for me, can I see your criminal history? It just doesn't even affect me. But I guarantee you, if I tried to go back into this world, this matrix, it would absolutely come up that I have a felony from 17 years ago. And it might even cost me a job. It definitely has kept me from being able to be rented around here, even though I paid my debt to society. But I got out in October 2008. I'm a felon now. I'm living in the Heights. I'm going to the Heights Library every day, applying for jobs, trying to get a job now because it was very difficult. But it was in this time that I felt like this cloud had lifted off me, not only the cloud of depression, like I finally was able to start saying I love myself and get to a point of where I felt pretty good about who I was, or at least that I was on the way to that point. I remember the first time I enjoyed a sunset, like truly, I think probably in my life. It was, and it's such a perfect example of what I was going through. I finally found a crappy job. It was 2-hour bus that way to like the west side of town, unloading some, you know, trucks. And they would only give me 4 hours a day, a couple days a week. That's all they would give me. But I had to take a 2-hour bus there, work 4 hours, 2-hour bus back this way, and do that a couple times just to keep going on my parole. So I met all the, you know, the demands that they had for me. But I was still just so happy. I was so happy to be free. I was like, I'm done with probation, parole. I'm done with all this. I'm free finally. I'm excited about the world. And I remember I was getting off from work and I was just walking to catch the bus and there was a field and there was a sunset. And I just ended up literally taking a nap and just chilling and watching the sunset. And that was something that was so different from anything I would have done previously. And it's actually interesting because as I started to change, some of the people I knew previously, I was still trying to keep some of my old circles around, right? Some old friends. But then I knew we were going in different directions when they started to say things like, I'm really getting sick of your optimism. Like the people I was hanging out, they were just like, you're too happy, man. I don't know. I don't get it. Like, are you sure you're not on drugs? I'm like, no, man, it's just chugging juice over here. I literally was going around. People were like, are you high, bro? Are you rolling? I'm like, no, this is just orange juice. I've just been chugging it all day. I was just happy to be alive. Like, I was happy to be alive. So it was in that space, going to the library every day over here in the Heights. Eventually, I decided to check out one of those books. I read this book called Cannabis, A History. It was all about the true origins of the drug war and specifically cannabis and the Harrison Act of 1914. And this whole history that I wasn't taught in high school. And as somebody who just got out of the drug war, out of prison for the drug war, it was very interesting to me. It was this light bulb went off like, oh, my God, this is not what I was told. And I just went through this. What else is there? And that was the beginning. That was going into 2009 to 2010. And I was living right down here on West Gray. Like I said, I watched a documentary, read a book, and things were never the same. Started the Houston Freethinkers and all these wonderful things I've been up to, right? But my point with sharing that story is that I believe that without going through that, I don't think I would have been here, right? That's what eventually led me to create the Conscious Resistance, right? So let me kind of give you a little bit more description of what happened. I get out 2008, going into 2009, I start waking up spiritually. I met some of these folks here. I start joining different meditation circles and consciousness groups in Houston. I start meeting different activists. And for the first couple years of my activism, I was basically living a double life because it was like a lot of the people I was working with at that time maybe didn't see the kind of synergy, the connection between the fight for freedom in the physical realm and that struggle for spiritual connection, right? So I would be at my activist groups and my protests and rallies, and we'd be on the street, you know, protesting the Federal Reserve or marching against Monsanto or whatever. And I'd say, hey guys, you want to come to this meditation or something? And they'd say, what are you talking about, hippie? We don't want to practice. You know, there was just a lot of disinterest in looking deeper, right? Or I'd say something weird like, hey guys, you ever thought maybe we're all God? Maybe we're just like reflections of each other. I'd start going off on some weird thing, and they would just look at me like I was crazy and treat me like I was crazy. So I was like, okay, I won't bring up my meditation interest to my activist friends. And then I'd be at my meditation circles and our consciousness groups, and I'd say, hey guys, have you heard about this latest police shooting? You see what they're trying to do with these vaccine mandates? And they'd say, don't talk about it. You're going to manifest it. Don't talk about it. Don't bring the bad vibes. You guys know what I'm talking about. And that was the reality. So for the first couple of years, I just, okay, I'll go to those groups with those people, and I'll go to the protests with these people, and that'll be that. And then in 2013, I had another shift or download, if you will, and that's when that phrase, the conscious resistance, came to me. So the conscious resistance, or what we more recently refer to as holistic activism, it's simply the recognition, the understanding that the struggle for a more free, ethical, and just world is not going to come from only confronting the physical institutions of power. Do we need to expose the Great Reset and the technocracy and the Bill Gateses and the Faucis of the world? Yes, absolutely. There needs to be accountability. There needs to be truth. There needs to be a reckoning. And that's why I do journalism. That's why I do documentaries. That's part of it for sure, right? But if we only focus on that element and we ignore what we call the internal tyrant, your own doubts, fears, insecurities, and limiting beliefs and things that can hold you back, then I think it will only take a couple generations before we cycle back and create the same thing. If we ignore our egos and the trauma that each of us have to different levels, that could be intergenerational trauma. It could be things that you've experienced directly in your life. I'm not here to tell you your path. I shared a little bit about my path because every time I share that story, somebody will come up to me and say, I've never touched drugs in my life, but this is the way I've been struggling. Or this is what my family's dealing with. Or this is what I'm going through, right? We're all in different places, and things that might seem silly to one person, like, oh, I can't believe you let that affect you. You're so beautiful and, you know, amazing. I can't believe that, can be very paralyzing for another person. And when I went through that and I made it through the other side, and I'm here now and I'm meeting other people who are still going through that. I meet addicts in our communities, people who are very awake to the world, but they're still struggling with their addictions, or they're still struggling with their traumas, right? And I recognize that, you know, let's imagine I was still going with that trauma right now. I was still addicted to drugs in 2021. And I met one of you amazing people on the streets. You tried to hand me a flyer, and you're telling me all about the vaccine passports and the mandates. I would have listened to you. I would have heard you, but I wouldn't have been able to do anything about it because I was trying not to kill myself that day. I was just trying to make it through another traumatic time, right? I was in a very bad place. And so I see that now. I see that there's so many other brothers and sisters that are dealing with various levels of trauma. And until we are able to help them kind of begin their healing journey, whatever that means, I'm not here to tell you what modality, whether that's prayer, meditation, or whatever, or even just talking with somebody, what to choose. That's up to you to decide. But whatever it is you choose, it's more important than ever, because I don't know if you guys are looking around the world right now, but it seems like this is probably the time we need the best versions of ourselves. Anybody else feel like this is the time you're here for? Like, this is the reason you're on this planet? I definitely feel like this is what I'm supposed to be here for. And I think to do that, we have an opportunity to rise to the occasion. And that's going to take effort. It's going to take energy. It's going to take maybe facing some things within us that we don't want to. It might take working with other people. It might take, you know, pushing past challenges and fears. So I just share that with you guys so you understand. That's why we start with the meditation. That's why we're bringing in that consciousness element, because absolutely, we're going to go out there and march tomorrow. We're going to talk to people about all the crimes that are happening. We're going to have a call for unity and for truth. But I also recognize that it is this much. It's internal as well. Is everybody coming to awareness that this is a spiritual battle as much as it is a physical one? Yeah. If you haven't yet, you will soon see that. So that was my long-winded introduction, guys. But thank you for being here. I'm going to continue. What are we facing? What are we facing? We'll just get right into it. I don't spend too much time on this. We've sort of sprinkled them throughout the night, but let's talk about the most recent and I think concerning elements. I told you earlier, they just approved the shots from 5 to 11 years old, right? It's not going to be long before different schools start mandating it, daycare centers, et cetera. It's not going to be too long behind that. By the end of this month, going into November, I think they have till November 8th, Canadian citizens who are not fully vaccinated can't fly domestically, can't take a bus domestically, can't take a train domestically. The United States just announced about a week ago that starting in November, Mexicans and Canadians trying to enter the country by flight have to be fully vaccinated. By January, all foreign travelers coming in have to be vaccinated. Land, ferry, air travel, whatever. That means there'll be no foreigners coming in the U.S. by 2020 who haven't been vaccinated, besides those who find their way around. Australia, probably the worst place to be right now in terms of COVID-1984, right? I'm sure you guys have, some of you have seen the videos or heard what's going on, but for those who haven't, let's just give a few examples. Australia, this far off distant nation that maybe some of us forget about, former prison colony, turning into a prison colony. The Northern Territory recently announced that by November, if you're not fully vaccinated, you will lose your job if you work around any other person to any capacity, whatever it is. If you see another human, the premier of the Northern Territory said, you must get the jab. And he said, you have 30 days. So by November 8th, those who are not jabbed in the Northern Territory will lose their jobs and face $5,000 fines. The government of New South Wales, a couple weeks ago, they announced that those who've been fully vaccinated now have 2 hours of recreational time outside. Not a lie. Literally, the government is telling people you can go outside of your homes for 2 hours a day. They have totally locked down that part of the country. Also in Melbourne, Australia, for the last, I think they're on their seventh or eighth lockdown at this point. You know, they kind of come up, oh, one case, lock them down again, right? They have what the police call the iron ring around the city. It's basically just checkpoints all around Melbourne that stops anybody from leaving. They have a curfew. So we actually have a couple of friends who are very active in Australia building freedom cells. And despite things going on, guys, I mean, we definitely should be praying for our brothers and sisters in Australia because things, we don't want them to get to this level ever here. And hopefully it doesn't progress. I mean, yes, that's what we were here for tonight, right? To make sure things don't get to that point. And we hope that they can stem the tide. I mean, they're protesting, they're pushing back how they can. People like Dave are trying to be prepared. And as John was saying, as we're here to talk about, trying to help people get off the systems. So Dave's in Melbourne, Australia, and he recently celebrated his 26th birthday. Just your average 26-year-old birthday. Sneak out past the curfew. Sneak out past the Iron Ring checkpoint around your city to go camping with some friends for a few days. And then come back and sneak past the checkpoint again to get home. Just your average 26-year-old having a birthday party. That's a reality already happening. People in France already being denied entry into supermarkets without being vaccinated. Ramiro mentioned the cell phone aspect. I've found some African countries denying people entry to mosque, church, and bank accounts. There definitely is talks of a no-fly list for the unvaccinated. It's been floated not just by random opinion, you know, makers, but by former Obama officials, people who work closely with the Biden administration. And, you know, we could go on and on a list. The point is, it might seem pretty normal for some people in Texas or Arizona, or again, we were just in Florida and people are chilling. You know, again, our governor's fighting for us, or things are, you know, there's nothing to worry about. And it does kind of seem pretty normal in some places, but that doesn't mean these agendas aren't rolling forward. It doesn't mean that their plan hasn't stopped in any way. You can ignore it, busy working and act like it's not happening, but it's going to happen and it's going to be in your face sooner or later. You might be able to ignore it right now, but sooner or later you won't. So a couple other points I'll make. We've seen a rise in authoritarianism, the police locking down police. We already met people on the tour, guys, who had their kids taken by CPS for not getting the COVID vaccination. People that we've met in different countries in different cities around the country. Let me tell you a story. We were in Lexington, Kentucky, right? Kentucky, again, one of these conservative places that's like, you know, we're not going to do the vaccine passports or vaccine mandates. You wouldn't expect something like this to happen, but it's happening everywhere, guys. Woman tells us, she's had the same doctor for 25 years for all four of her kids. Her youngest now, she thinks he has strep throat. So she went to the doctor to try to go get him to do a swab to give him a test. The doctor refused to, you know, treat her or her son because they wouldn't wear a mask. That was the first thing. And then, okay, you're unvaccinated. They had to argue and debate for about an hour. Finally, the doctor agrees to see her and her son to do the swab, but only in the alley behind the office. After he erects a big tent and puts on a hazmat suit and lectures her for another 30 minutes, would he then swab the child to do the test, right? Lexington, Kentucky. Even in the places you might not think these kinds of things are happening, they're already happening in the U.S. We were just in Brooklyn. You can't go in gyms, bars, and restaurants without showing proof of vaccination. San Francisco, same thing. L.A. County, New Orleans. You know, we shouldn't rest on our laurels because we're in Texas. Let's talk about the vaccine passports. This is where it's at right now. This is the sort of the battle of the moment. And I think this is probably the battle that matters, right? Because the vaccine passport, which of course is going to be a digital ID, there's many of them now, the Common Pass funded by the Rockefeller Foundation, the Clear Pass, there's a number of them out there. They've been working on them. The World Economic Forum, the people behind the Great Reset have been promoting it for the last year. As John said, they envision a world, this technocracy. They're claiming it's going to be super convenient. It's going to be friendly to the environment. But you'll own nothing and you'll be happy, right? Because we're going to give up all of our free will just for the good of each other or something, sort of utopian lies. The point is, The vaccine passport is the first step to a biometric ID, which will be needed to get in and out of anywhere, guys. In and out of everywhere and anywhere. If you have a 401k, they're going to squeeze you. If you have a welfare check, they're going to squeeze you. If you have a veterans check, they're going to squeeze you. If you're dependent on these things, right now they are finding every vulnerability they can, and they are squeezing until people comply. The time of offering you donuts and free money is over. They've said it themselves. The voluntary phase is over. There's talk in parts of Australia and other places about lockdowns for the unvaccinated. You're vaccinated, you can go outside, but not if you didn't get the shot, right? What does that look like? Who knows? The point is, these things are happening, they're taking place. And before we get to the vaccine passports, I do want to note that another aspect of COVID-1984 of the last year has been a censorship of people talking about these things. Some of you know that I had my YouTube channel deleted last October, actually a year ago right now, which is kind of cool because even though they did that, 5 million plus views, 9 years worth of work. Thankfully, I saved all my videos elsewhere. Despite that, and feeling like for a while, like, holy crap, that's it. Like, how am I going to reach anybody? We just did a tour of 29 cities around the country with crowds of 70, 80, 100 people who are still getting the message and who are finding it. Whether it's on BitChute or, you know, wherever it is, they're still looking. They're still finding. There's so many more of us out there than they want us to believe. And I've been letting people know like this. People say, oh, it's so good to meet you. You're not just a person on the other side of the screen. Sometimes, you know, it feels like you're not even real. For me, for us as content creators and as journalists, the operation goes the other way. They want us to feel like nobody's listening. Maybe I should give up. There's nobody paying attention. You can't even trust the numbers anywhere, I don't think, but maybe I should give up. It feels like I'm just shouting into a black hole. Nobody's listening. I might as well just stop doing it. That's what they want us to think. So it was great for me to connect to all these people who are like, I keep up with your work. I follow, or I met you this place, or I've been following you since this time. I started doing Freedom Cells because of what you said here, right? Just to see the real world impact. It's just been a huge, like, it's been the energy I need to keep going for another while. So the vaccine passport, this is rolling out everywhere around the world in different forms. And they're going to use this as a way to get towards a full-on biometric ID. People becoming familiar with the terms like social credit score. You heard this term, social credit score? For those who haven't, you know about a financial credit score, right? You take out a loan, you don't pay things back, you're going to get a bad credit rating. You can't buy a car, you know, you can't take out other loans. It's going to affect you negatively. And that system itself is already screwed up. It's already, yeah, exactly. It's already got its own issues that we could talk about all night. But a social credit score, right? So this isn't just about your money. This is about your social interactions, the way you interact with society. So for example, and this system already exists in China and in parts of Estonia, the digital nation, one of the first world digital nations, and some other places that are testing it out. Think about this, okay? If you take your trash out on time, your social credit score goes up. If you pay your taxes on time, your social credit score goes up. This is real. If you read Mao's Little Red Book every afternoon at peak hours, your score goes up because you're showing you're a good, obedient, you know, servant of the state. Let's say you're one of those extremists we keep hearing about that like to post mean things about the government on the internet. Your score goes down. And this is already happening. Chinese activists are being affected for protesting, speaking out, their scores go down. So scores go up if you do good things. Score goes down if you do do negative things. As defined by the government, of course, right? But this is where it gets real, guys. You might say, okay, well, this is just some number, right? Who cares if I have a bad social credit score? I don't even know what that means. It's just a funny internet number. But already, millions of Chinese citizens have been denied the right to fly out of their own country because their score being too low. People have been denied loans. People have been denied promotions. And that system is already integrated, and it's helped by facial recognition cameras. They couldn't do this system without hundreds of thousands of facial recognition cameras around their nation. And that is a threat that the U.S. is facing. There have been plenty of people much brighter and more kind of informed in this area. Lawyers, digital privacy groups have been warning for years that we are walking right into a digital dystopia because of AI and facial recognition. And it's sort of just this legal gray area. Like for me, as an anarchist, I'm not really one to call for regulation, but I do see that there are certain technologies that maybe we should stop and kind of think about, because when you turn on certain switches, there's no going back, right? When you turn on, you have this full-on AI system connected to facial recognition cameras that can find you within 5 minutes, which is what they have already in China, then we're in a bad place. That's the end of privacy, right? And we're walking towards that. There's companies that are already doing that. It's not just the government. You might have heard of Clearview AI. They're one of the first companies people are learning about in the past year. They have the world's largest face print database. This is known as your face print, you know? And there's even some people who believe the trend of selfies playing on our narcissism was a way to gather a lot of face prints. And now companies like them, they create algorithms and programs to just scoop data from all the information we've voluntarily freely given, and they put it into a database and they sell it to governments and police and anybody who can afford it. That's Clearview AI. They're just one company. So you have the threat of privacy from private organizations as well as governments and then the World Economic Forum and others, right? That's the world that they're talking about, technocracy. As John mentioned earlier, you'll own nothing and be happy, right? You guys have heard that phrase. What it really means is that they believe a technocracy is not ruled by the people. You know, even if you, I'm sure many of us have questions about the idea of democracy itself, but it's not even that. It's not even a dictatorship, one person making decisions. It's the idea that the people who should make the decisions in our world are the technological elite, the scientific experts. Trust the experts, trust the science, right? Sound familiar? And this philosophy has been around for almost 200 years. In fact, people like Elon Musk's grandfather was one of the founders of the Social Credit Party in Canada. A lot of people don't know that. Interesting connection, right? And some of these same people, the Musks, the Bezos, the Zuckerbergs, these are the Gates, the Klaus Schwabs, these are the unelected power, the technocrats. None of us ever voted for them for anything, for dog catcher or for anything. And yet they're using their money and their influence to geoengineer the skies, to buy up all the farmland, to change the food. And they're telling us it's all for the good, right? So we're focusing again on what they're talking about, their vision. The reason I'm emphasizing that is because the rest of this is about what is our vision. They've spent trillions of dollars and generational familial planning to bring this vision to fruition, right? You've heard of the term Agenda 2030? Well, Agenda 2030 is the goal to bring all the 17 United Nations Sustainable Development Goals by the year 2030. And again, they all use the buzzwords, diversity, inclusivity, equity, sustainability, all of it. But it's ultimately about centralized control. It's about technocrats making the decisions. It's not saying, hey, let's have more local community farming and permaculture. It's like, no, let's make top-down decisions and we'll reset the food supply. You might have heard the United Nations Food Systems Summit met 2 weeks ago. It was the United Nations, the World Economic Forum, and a bunch of corporations talking about how to reset the food supply. You know, these are the same people who brought us the Green Revolution of the 1970s. For those who are unfamiliar with that, it's famous for such hits as Indian farmer suicides, Monsanto, glyphosate, GMOs. Those same people are now saying, hey, we're going to reset the food supply because COVID has proven our systems are unsustainable. They're back in the saddle and they're promising us it's going to be better, right? That's their vision. They called this decade, 2 weeks ago at the United Nations Summit, they called this the decade of transformation. It's 2030 is their goal. It's 2021, and we're going into 2022, guys. They have their vision. They are putting all of their energy, all their propaganda, and their whole machine into bringing this to reality. We heard about it all last year. You remember that phrase, the new normal, the new normal, the new normal? They've been trying to program it in your heads for a while now. So that's what we're facing. We're facing their decade of transformation. They've invested all their money. And again, while most of us are just so stuck on how many likes we have this moment or how many kind of dopamine releases can I get right here? What can I distract myself right here in this moment? These people are thinking about what projects can I start that my great-grandchildren are going to finish, right? That's the kind of planning we need to get back to, is thinking about our families, thinking long-term. So that's what I'm here to invite you to do tonight. That's what we're facing, guys. Nothing less than that. Then the full-on loss of individual privacy and individual liberty if you choose to live in the smart city. For those who followed my work, Houston was announced as a smart city October 2018. That's when I started doing the 5G Trojan horse, and I questioned the current mayor and his connections to the wireless industry. Just so you guys know, just to really bring this to fruition, I've been working on some reporting. I haven't released this yet, but Houston, this area is one of the major planned places, and Austin as well. They want to turn Austin into the Silicon Valley of Central Texas. They want to, all the big tech companies are investing in Austin and Houston. The mayor, Sylvester Turner, has been doing a great job implementing Agenda 2030 plans. He sits on what's called the Resilient Council, which is funded by the Rockefeller Foundation. I imagine when he leaves office in a couple of years, he's going to retire, just continue working in that, you know, private sector. My point is this current mayor has helped roll out so much of this. So while you might not be seeing it or paying attention to it on the local level, or it might feel, oh, the United Nations, World Economic Forum, that sounds so far away. It's happening in the backyard. When they talk about resiliency, sustainability, yeah, maybe they're starting by saying they want to build more bike lanes, but ultimately it's about getting more control of the local thoroughfares, getting more control of where you can go, what you can do. Do you have enough carbon credits to travel today? That's where it's all going. Spend enough time talking about the problems. If any of that's new to you guys, I invite you to go to my website, theconsciousresistance.com. Check out my documentaries, search the words of the Great Reset, Agenda 2030, look up my name in those terms and dive down the rabbit hole. I want to warn you about three traps that I'm seeing as we're traveling, and these are within our community and within maybe people who are not in the community, so to speak. Three traps, guys, just to be looking out for. The first one is defeatism. Everything I just described was pretty overwhelming. We could talk all night about the minutiae of it, the details of how big it really is. I understand that it's overwhelming. And it can be easy to fall into a place of feeling hopeless or defeated. Anybody felt that way in the last year and a half? Maybe those of you who just started questioning things, like, or even if you've been around for a while, it's like, holy crap, we've never seen this level of propaganda, right? This is new. This is, wow. A lot of us, maybe some of you lost friends, family, the last year and a half for your health choices. Yeah, I think that's happening more and more, right? We're dealing with some difficult circumstances. I understand why somebody might come away feeling hopeless or like there's no solutions. But there are solutions. You know, Ramiro's talking about some. John's talking about some. I'm going to share some with you. They take steps. They take effort, take energy, but they are possible. You know, I think of the waking up process, if we're going to use those terms of us waking up. It's like a grieving process, right? Anybody get angry when they first started waking up, questioning the world around them, feel like maybe righteous anger, like, holy shit, I can't believe these people lied to me. What the hell? Like, what are we going to do about it? Anybody feel sad? Like, I can't believe people lied to me. This is so sad. I don't understand. Right? You have those emotions. I definitely went through it. My family, if they might remember, I definitely went to everybody that would listen, was like, hey, have you ever heard of this? Do you know about this? Have you seen this thing? I woke up my older brother, and then he started calling me all paranoid. Do you know about this? Have you heard about this? I'm like, I remember this clearly, though, because I was literally living down the block, and I'm like outside on the phone talking to my brother, pacing outside. I'm like, oh my God, yeah, dude, you know now too? We're both like, and he's about to have his first child. And he's just like, oh man, I think I just screwed up. Like, I don't know if I could, you know, I'm bringing a kid into this world. And I just remember how real that was. And I remember telling him, I'm sorry, man. I feel like I shouldn't have told you about this. And he said, no, because then I'd just be walking around like another zombie. Like, thank you for telling me, you know. And it's just been, you know, slowly I've been planting seeds with my family. They can attest to that. Whenever they're willing to listen, I share things because it matters to me. And I want the people who I care about to know about the things that I care about, especially in these really scary times. But when you start to up, you can go through anger. You can go through sadness. It is a grieving process. There's this psychological model for grieving called the Kubler-Ross model. You probably know about it in theory, if not in name. Now, it describes a 7-stage process that people pass through on the way to accepting a grievance, right? That could be a death. It could be the loss of a job, whatever it is. Typically, the first stage is denial, right? So let's imagine you're starting to wake up, right? Those seeds have been planted. You got a friend telling you to watch some documentaries. You watch it. You read the book, whatever. And your mind's like, holy crap. Oh my God. No, there's no way. There's no way. This can't be true. You're in that denial stage, right? But you keep digging. You keep digging. And before you know it, you can no longer deny it. So much of what you've been told growing up by people you were taught to trust is not true. And then that totally shifts your paradigm. And you start going through the emotions, the sadness, maybe the anger. Ideally, you spend time in these places and then you get to a place of acceptance. Okay, this is reality. I got to deal with it. And then you get to a proactive stage. Now, what can I do about it? I need to find other people, you know, start getting some stuff done. But for some of us, we get stuck in those first couple stages, the sadness and the anger, right? And things can start to feel hopeless. I tend to call this stage the Alex Jones phase. Whatever you think about Alex Jones, his work is definitely tinged with doom porn and like fear porn. Like they're not saying that there aren't facts in there, but even when it's facts, it definitely doesn't leave you coming away feeling like, oh, we got this. Now it's like, oh my God, we're screwed. That's what happened to me. I watched, seriously, it was at this freaking Barnes & Noble. I'm looking, this is when DVDs were still around 10 years ago, right? And I'm looking around and it's like, Endgame, Blueprint for Global Enslavement. That's interesting. So I get home to my apartment right down the road and just 2 hours later, it's like, oh my God, nothing matters. Nothing matters anymore. And it's like, oh my God, it's happening today. I went through that freak out stage, right? And that happens for some people. And when you get in that stage, you become what I call the defeatist, or you can fall into the defeatist trap, right? Of just feeling hopeless. So for this person, anything you can suggest is not good enough for them, right? Any solution you may have, political, activist-wise, whatever it is, this person thinks it's hopeless. And I don't know what their solution is if they just stay on Facebook and complain all day. But let's imagine you tell the defeatist, hey man, we're really concerned about food supply chain shortages and all this stuff. I'm gonna start growing my own food. Oh, that's cute. You think they're going to let you grow your own food? You think they're going to let you grow your own food? Yeah, we got a community. We're going to get some land. We're going to start growing food. You ever heard of Waco? You think they're just going to let you live free? It's like, oh, well, we're thinking about getting alternative currencies. We're going to start investing maybe in precious metals or crypto. Oh, they own that. They controlled that. They infiltrated that. That's a shill. He's a shill. She's a shill. Any solution you got is not good enough for this person. You guys met this person? Oh, yeah. Seen them on the internet once or twice? Maybe you've been this person.
Don't be this person. Guys, there are solutions. There are solutions. Yes, what we are facing is overwhelming. But, and yes, let's acknowledge there is nobody else coming to save us. You know, there's a lot of myths I've been kind of keying in on as we're doing this tour. One of these myths, it seems like they all come from Hollywood. One of these myths is that somebody else is coming to save us. You know, I know the Matrix is coming out again, and that's cool. But there's no one coming to save us. There's no the Avengers or X-Men. It's us. We are the X-Men. Yeah, it's, or the aliens are coming to save us, or QAnon, or whatever you want to put place in that place, right? The point is, we have to step up. That's where I'm coming from, at least. To me, it seems like, hey, we get to be the ones, right? And look around the room, guys. Like I said earlier with this tour, there is true diversity in this room. Women, men, different ages, different races. What's the? We got anybody in their 70s in the room? 60s. Don't be shy. 60s down to, Logan's probably the youngest. Two. So 60 down to two, right? Like I said, we've had folks as old as 94 down to 5 months old on this tour. Different backgrounds. The beautiful thing that I see is, you know, I don't come to do these events and assume, I don't assume much, but I definitely don't assume that we all agree on everything, right? Because I think that would be a bad assumption to make. Because just because we came here tonight doesn't mean we all have the same lifestyles, we like the same music, same diet, hang out at the same places. But more than those superficial things, we're getting united now around principles that actually matter. You guys care about self-ownership, bodily autonomy, individual liberty? We're on the same team then. Thank you for caring about those things. Even if I disagree with you in other areas, I'll still fight with you, okay? That's what we need to come to a place of, where we put those things aside. There are solutions. Don't fall into the defeatism. The second trap I want to warn you about is division. People coming to recognize that the division is the conspiracy. The division is the conspiracy. They would love to see us continue to further divide and separate into our own little silos. And well, no, those, I can't work with those people, and I can't work with those people. Anyone had their assumptions turned up in the last year? People who you thought maybe would have never fallen for the COVID stuff going that way, and people who you thought, I'd never work with that kind of person. Now you're marching on the streets with them, or you're working alongside with them. It's beautiful to see, you know, because as I was saying earlier, despite the propaganda, you can't categorize everybody in this room or any of the rooms we've been over the last 2 months as a right-wing extremist, whatever they want to say, right? We're way more diverse than that. They would like us to believe that it's just this one type of person that's asking questions. I'll ignore those cops and ignore those firefighters and the EMS and the teachers and the nurses and these health professionals. Ignore the scientists. Yeah, ignore the fact that there's a diverse crowd of people. No, they want us to be in this little bubble, right? Right now, the current expression of the division is vaccinated versus unvaccinated, right? Again, anybody lost friends or family or at least strained relationships because of their health decisions? You're definitely not alone in that equation. It's unfortunate that that's what things are coming to. Anybody here at the moment at risk of losing their job in the coming weeks or months? I know friends who've already lost their jobs. Yep, there's a handful of us here. And I would love to connect with you guys, by the way. Those of you who just raised your hands, please make sure to come up and say something to me. I'm working with some other groups like Make Americans Free Again and some others. We're trying to get a real directory going because there's a huge opportunity right now, right? People are looking to pull their kids out of school. It's scary, especially if you got a couple of kids, you've never done it before. You need community. But what about all those teachers that are being fired? We need to bring them into these homeschooling communities. We need to find the teachers that have good experience, right? What about the nurses? We might not agree with some of their decisions, maybe to give out vaccines or whatever, but they have experience. They have knowledge that can be useful to communities, right? And ultimately, we have to come together now because society around us is saying, you're not welcome. If you don't want to get this jab, you can't fly here. You can't work here. You can't come here, right? So we can either beg, please, please let us back in, or let's wait till 2022 or 2024, or let's just hope the courts figure it out for us. We can trust the courts, right? They've never done us wrong. Anybody else feel like we're in a time-sensitive situation right now? Again, 2030, 2021. I've been trying to do a cost-benefit analysis with my activism. What is the best use case of my time, right? What is the best way that I can reach people? Miriam and I decided, we're going to spend 2 months away from our comfortable, beautiful, nice, not hot Houston weather in Mexico to travel the country, be away from our comfort zone, deal with the stress, the money, the energy, and all of it because it's important right now. It felt important enough to be out connecting with people. I don't know that there's anything else more important right now other than showing people that they're not alone right now, that there's so many more of us than they would like us to believe, and that we need to act now if we want to continue to thrive. Because I could just keep listing off more stories of different cities. Toronto Hospital Network says they're no longer going to give out organ transplants to the unvaccinated. Canadian Town says they won't do marriage licenses for the unvaccinated. Not that you should go to the state for a marriage license, but still,
These are different ways. How long before they tie vaccination status to renewing your driver's license, your registration, your work, your passport, right? We've been traveling very much with the awareness that sooner or later, they are going to close the border. By the way, they've been lying to you for the last year and a half. The border's never been closed at the Mexico border, but they've been saying it's been closed since March 20th. I'm sure a couple of days ago they announced, oh, it's closed for 30 more days. They don't ask you anything about COVID. It's literally like it's not even happening. We've gone back and forth several times. It's not a risk. There's nothing. But just by saying that, some people just stay home, right? That's the other thing to recognize. So much of their propaganda is just wordplay, right? Maybe they say you got to put a mask on or you got to do this and that, but then you find out some businesses aren't complying. They're just kind of quietly going about their business. Maybe they're not making a big deal about it, but it's all just fear, right? It's all just in our head. So much of it is. Now, there are very real guns backing us up as well. There are very real people who are indoctrinated, who are just doing their jobs. That's a reality to contend with as well. My point here is that right now, more than ever, we need compassion and empathy. There are a lot of people who are very traumatized right now. Miriam might have shared this earlier. When we were in Portland for the first March Against Vaccine Passports, we met this woman who was, I'd never actually seen the trauma in person, like the stuff that maybe in our circles we sort of laugh at, right? Because it's easy to be like, oh, those stupid sheeple, those COVIDiots, we're so enlightened. Look at us versus them, right? It's easy in these circles to fall into that mentality. We got it all figured out. We're awake. And they're clearly stupid sheep, right? We don't have anything in common with them. You got to understand, for one, guys, the infrastructure that these psychopaths have built didn't exist 2 or 3 years ago. There weren't corporate fact checkers a couple of years ago. There weren't fake news boxes. So every time a new mind tries to start questioning things, boom, here's a fake news box to tell them, don't worry about that. That's fake news. These people are crazy. Don't even question it. Okay, I guess I shouldn't go further. Unless somebody has that true desire to push past, it is much more difficult to just randomly wake up. Some of us were around when you could just stumble into these videos on YouTube and elsewhere. That doesn't happen anymore, guys. So yeah, they've taken it over. They've cleansed the internet. We've been seeing this sort of sanitizing of the internet for the last couple of years. So recognize that one. Have empathy, because it's a lot harder for people to wake up today than it was before. There's a lot more information. There's also a lot more crap. So it's hard to kind of filter through that. Have compassion for these people. Maybe they're just waiting for you to come hand them a flyer. Maybe instead of making fun of them behind the back, go try to talk to them about why you feel so strongly about these issues, right? Maybe try practicing compassion. This woman that we saw that came up at the tail end of the tour of the march, she was double masked outside by herself on a beautiful sunny day. And she, are you guys with this march? Yeah, we're here documenting it. I've been racking my brain all night. I just don't understand. Why don't they care about people? Like, I don't think that's why they're here. They actually do care about people. That's what, you know, would you, and Miriam tried to hand her a flyer. Would you like to see a flyer of why we're here? Just put it on the ground. Like, and this is, again, the woman telling us she's double vaccinated, double masked, outside, and she's just, but I'm telling you, when I saw this, I was like, oh my God, this is it. This is the trauma. This is the kind of person that hasn't left her home in a year and a half. This is the kind of person that is just deeply ingrained into that, right? And when we tried to talk to her, you could see the programming. Every way that we would pitch her an idea, she would block it with this, oh, you guys are from Texas. Of course, that makes sense. Well, you're just young and, you know, you're ignorant. Miriam tried to tell her, you know, ma'am, all this stress is not good for your immune system. Oh, like, so you don't believe in your own immune system? It was just so hard to get anywhere with her. But ultimately, you know, we were able to compassionately just, we're not going to agree. Let's go our own way. But the programming was real, guys. And to the point where she said something like, well, the government gives us our rights. And I mean, it was just like, I was like, whoa, hold on, ma'am. And I had to just tell her, I was like, ma'am, like, you are a free person just standing there and no government or constitution is needed. You're a free person just right there. I'm a free person here. You know, and it was just, it was difficult. My point is that that trauma is real, guys. That trauma is real. There are people who haven't been going anywhere. They've been terrified out of their minds. And only imagine what the kids are going through of those, the kids of those people. You know, they're putting masks on the kids. And as we said today, now those shots are approved for ages 5 to 11. They said they have 25 million doses ready to start distributing. We have to think about where it's going and what we're going to do. Defeatism, division. The division is easy to fall into, but practice compassion as you can. The third trap I want to warn about is normalcy bias. Guys, normalcy bias, this is what I'm saying. I think people are starting to fall back into this complacency and feeling like, okay, well, because my governor did this executive order, I don't have to do anything anymore. Or, well, because we're not locked down at the moment, things are good, it's okay, right? Oh, that's just New York. That could never happen here. That's just, you know, San Francisco. That'll never happen here, right? Last year, when because I don't know how you guys feel, but for me and Miriam, the shit has already hit the fan. Like, some people are like, well, if the shit hits the fan, then I'll start talking to you guys about what are you talking about? The shit hit the fan last year. It's flinging around the room right now and smacking you in the face, and you're just not paying attention to it. You're just like, what's that smell? I don't know. It's okay. For us, the line has already been crossed. Like, that was it. They've already shown they're willing to go. They're going to go further too, but they've already shown they'll lock you down if they say so. They'll take your job away if they say so. And you don't like it, then they'll put you in jail for it. They'll censor you for it, right? This is just the beginning. Right now, it's a social faux pas. You might lose your job or people look at you ugly. Oh, you don't vaccinate, right? We're not at the point yet where, well, we're getting there, right? They want to literally starve people out, can't come to the grocery store. It's about compliance, guys. And last year, people saw that, and there was so much momentum. Freedom Cell Network went from 3,000 to 27,000 in the last year. It's beautiful, and it's still growing. We're still seeing growth. The website's one thing, but on Telegram, we have no idea how many cells there are now. They're in Belgium. They're in Australia. They're in Spain. They're in, South Africa. Like, we keep finding about new ones that people are just creating on their own. And that's not to say every cell is as organized as, some of the others, but people are at different stages of getting involved, and they're looking for other people. They're connecting. That's what's most important. A lot of us before might have felt alone. We felt all disparate. Now people are coming together, right? So last year, this movement's happening. And then as the lockdowns faded, it seems like people are, things have kind of gone back to normal. Remember, this isn't normal. This is the new normal, as they call it, right? Can we all accept that it should never be normal to see masks on kids? Yeah. Can we accept that? Absolutely not. Like, that is not a thing we should be accepting right now. So it's cool that we can go hang out at a bar and nobody's going to bother us. And we're not at the point where they're asking us to go to the gym, to show this. But there's still people going along with the program, right? This isn't normal. We shouldn't just, now everything's are chill. Oh, there's a kid with a mask. I'll just ignore that. Like, that's normal. It's not normal to be hearing about no fly list for the unvaccinated. It's not normal to be talking about not letting people into the grocery store without being, getting the shot. These things are not normal. Don't fall into normalcy bias. Normalcy bias is a cognitive bias which leads individuals to dismiss incoming or oncoming threats. Typically, it's talked about in terms of incoming weather disasters, right? So Houston, we get hurricanes. This is the person that is getting told, hey, you're in Galveston. You're in direct line of the hurricane. No, everything's going to be okay. I'll be fine. It keeps getting closer. They keep dismissing the threat. They think, oh, no, it's going to turn. Surely I'll be fine. And of course, at the last minute, please come save me. This is something in our brain. It's kind of beautiful, but it's also really scary, where we seek equilibrium. We seek balance, right? Even in the face of scary conditions and scary situations, your brain will try to find that balance, try to keep you calm, try to keep you from going into a state of panic. But maybe right now we don't need panic, but we do need a little bit of awareness of what's happening. We don't need calm and ignorance at the moment. Let me give you another example of what I would consider normalcy bias. Imagine any totalitarian regime that you've seen throughout history, the ones that history has shown us in the last couple hundred years. That could be Nazi, fascist, communist, just totalitarian regime. Very limited freedom of press, very limited freedom of speech. Maybe on the edge of town, there's a work camp or a labor camp where people are taken if they do the wrong things, right? And you don't speak about it too much above a whisper, but you go about life. Now think about those regimes, that situation. Do you think those people never smiled? You think they never celebrated birthday parties? You think they never said, I love you, to their loved ones? Of course they did, because even in the worst circumstances, our beautiful brains will find a way to go about life. Even if there's some really scary things happening, don't talk about it too much. Don't whisper about what they're doing. Otherwise, you'll be taken next in the middle of the night. But you still go to work and you go about your day and you try to practice and act like you still got your kids. And maybe in the back of your mind, like, okay, we're going to figure something out. We'll figure this out sooner or later. Right now, I just got to be peaceful and calm. And that can happen. You can get comfortable and used to very scary, disturbing things that should not be normal. I'm here to say, like, we need to be careful of that. Their plans are not going away. Even if it feels calm at the moment, even if things feel chill here in Texas or wherever else, it's not going away. There are still people making this effort, and it's going to continue. And I don't think you should be trusting the words of Greg Abbott when he's trying to run for re-election and maybe thinks he could have a chance at president. And executive orders can be overturned. These things aren't permanent. So just be careful into falling into that trap, but also be careful about falling into this trap of normalcy bias. The rest of the conversation, all the things we described, the technocracy, where it's headed, and these three traps I'm mentioning, the reason I'm mentioning that is because I do see people falling into division, falling into thinking things are normal and everything's okay right now, falling into defeatism. And if we fall into those traps, we will be swallowed up by the technocracy. If we don't create our own vision, because look, again, they've got this clear vision, smart city, technocracy, great reset, you'll own nothing and be happy. They've written books about it. They're holding conferences about it. They got a new one coming out, The Great Narrative. Now they're talking about how they can shape the narrative. This is the next part of The Great Reset. But what do we have? What are you aiming for? If you don't know that, then it's hard to imagine how you're going to get there. So we need to watch out for these traps, and we need to consciously think about where we're headed. The rest of the talk is coming from my book, How to Opt Out of the Technocratic State. You can download it for free at theconsciousresistance.com/how-to. We also have it Spanish and French if you want. We just ran out of the English copies. But please download it if you haven't checked it out. I wrote this book in late 2019 and published it in January 31st, 2020. 2 weeks later, we heard the word COVID-19. The book is 100% relevant to what we're dealing with right now, because not because I had a crystal ball. The book doesn't mention COVID at all. But again, those who were paying attention could see the direction we were headed. There have been people warning about AI, warning about facial recognition, warning about the loss of individual liberty and privacy and this world we're marching into. So I started asking myself, how does somebody like me, who strives to be free of these systems, or somebody who's deeply ingratiated in these systems, you got a 401k or a bank account, maybe you have some debt, different things that you feel tie you to these various systems that now can be used against you. How does somebody like that find a way to navigate through that, right? How do you maintain freedom and privacy in the face of technocracy? That was the whole kind of goal of the conversation and the book. And that's what we're going to focus on now for these last 15, 20 minutes here. You guys still with me? Thank you, guys. I appreciate your patience. How to opt out of the technocratic state. These solutions that I'm presenting tonight, they are not easy. They are not easy. Let me say that deeply. They are not easy. There's no 1-2-3-step program I'm trying to sell you tonight. I don't think any of us are. Anybody who does try to tell you, sign up for my email list and, you know, in 3 days we'll defeat the deep state, is full of it, right? Real change is generational. It starts with the eldest here and it continues with the youngest. That's how real change takes hold, when we carry on ideals from one generation to the next. It's generational. It takes effort. So the solutions I'm presenting tonight are not political. They are not legal jargon, and they are not lawsuits. And that's not to say you shouldn't fight in those arenas. I'm not here to tell you again what to do. I'm here to suggest some ideas, some alternatives. If you feel like fighting with lawsuits and fighting the political realm, or fighting, you know, legal jargon, common law, paperwork, whatever, if that serves you, fight in those ways. But again, for me, we're in a time-sensitive situation. I don't know that it serves me best to just, okay, I'm going to donate some money to this lawsuit and I'll just hope that they can take care of it. Meanwhile, I'm going to sit around doing nothing. Or I'm going to wait for somebody to run for president in 2024 and hope that, you know, they can turn things around. Now, if you're going to do those things, now, if you're going to play the political realm and you're going to play the lawsuit realm or whatever, do that and plant food and try to get out of the big tech system. And try to get off the bank. You know, you can do both, right? If you feel the need to do that, that's fine. Put your time and energy into that, but don't assume that that's going to turn out for the best, right? Don't put all your hope and faith into that. So again, the solutions we're talking about are not easy, and they're generational. It's going to involve lifestyle changes. It might involve career changes. It might involve moving. It could involve, as I said earlier, working with people you never thought. Because the reality is, there are people who are like, I've been working at this job for 30 years, and now if I want to keep working there, I have to either get this thing up my nose every day, or I have to get this shot in my arm, and I'm not willing to do that. Okay, well then what are you willing to do to stay free? What are you willing to do to make sure your kids are still free? Are you only going to focus on, well, I have to change something now? That's uncomfortable. That's difficult. It's frustrating. It's hard. I have to learn a new skill. Or are you going to look past that momentary discomfort and say, I need to think for the future, right? That's what I'm encouraging people to do. Is just stop thinking about how things are difficult now. Oh, I might lose my job, or I might have to take the kids out of school, or maybe we have to move. Yeah, but do you want to be free? Do you want your kids to have a future? Do you want them to have the option? I don't know that sitting still is going to get us there. I don't know that acting like this isn't happening is going to get us there. It's going to take real concrete effort, movement, action to get these things. So those are the kind of solutions that I'm here to present. They're not easy in any way. But if you hear me say something and that comes up and you're like, okay, Derek, I hear you, but that's not easy. I have, you know, I'm working 70 hours a week and I have 4 kids and I have these different things. I hear you. I empathize. But let's brainstorm on how do you start making moves, right? Because I guarantee you, in any situation you're in, no matter how entangled into the system you feel, there are steps you can start taking. It can be as simple as stop using Gmail, stop using Google. That's a big step, right? Now you're making the changes. For example, Ramiro was talking about the above phone. This is it. Miriam and I have been using this as we travel. We're not using Google Maps as we travel. We're using 3 different open source map alternatives. We're not sending Google any of our data. It's a learning curve. Sometimes we've gotten lost. We're like, what the hell does that damn thing say? Because we're so used to Google's stuff, right? We can't even look at another map because we've been staring at Google's for so long, right? That's a problem. If I'm like, wow, it looks so different because I'm so used to looking at the company map. That's a... of it is convenient, exactly. A lot of it is simple, and that's what I'm saying. If your privacy isn't worth inconveniencing yourself a little bit, well, that sounds nice, but It's so much easier. I already got all my places pre-programmed into Google Maps and all my stuff's in Gmail. It's going to take a lot of effort. I guess you don't really care about having privacy, then. That's just it. I mean, you do what you do you, but if you don't can't even make a simple step, learn a new tool, go meet some people, put some food in the garden, whatever it is that serves you, then I don't know. Maybe you don't really want to be free into the future. It's not going to come easy. Now, I want to make a point here that hopefully some of you have been realizing that the world around us is increasingly making it difficult just to be a free person, right? The world around you, most of you probably haven't changed to any major degree in the last year and a half. The world around you has changed. Now the world is saying, you're not welcome here. You can't come in here without that shot. You know, you have to pay this fine. I just found out today, the people who've been getting fined in Australia, they announced that now they're seizing people's bank accounts if they don't pay back the fines. They're seizing people's homes. So maybe you thought, who cares? They can fine me all they want. I'm just going to ignore it. Now they're coming for your bank account and for your home, right? Their goal is mass compliance. They're not going to stop. And if you are dependent on their systems, they're going to squeeze you. They're going to find every vulnerability and every weakness they can, and they will squeeze it, my friends. The best move is to not be dependent on those systems. Don't wait for them to come tell you, sorry, you can't come back to work anymore, sir. You don't have the jab. Oh, I don't have a plan. I didn't think ahead. I knew I should have, but I guess I'll just do it because I don't know how I'm going to eat tomorrow without it. Don't be caught in that situation. Unfortunately, some people in this room who maybe feel like they don't want the shot, we'll go ahead and do it when the time comes because they're not going to hear this message. They're not going to take it to heart and they're not going to come up with a plan. And the job is going to tell them, or the kids are going to be told at school, you can't come back without the shot. And because they didn't think ahead, they're going to comply. Or maybe a family member is going to say, you're not welcome here. Or friends, right? Some people's friend circles. And it's a lonely time. There are people who would rather take a shot, you know, gamble with the shot than be alone, right? You know, well, my friends aren't going to hang out with me if I don't get this. I don't really want it, but I'm sick of being alone. It's been a sad, lonely year. I guess I'll go ahead and do it, right? That's why we need community and we need to be proactive. The world around us is making it clear it's illegal to be free. Now, let me describe a situation. Maybe last year there were people who are just average Americans, good Americans, pay their taxes on time, never been in trouble a day in their life, never been arrested. And then this year, they're in the back alley buying negative PCR tests or fake vaccine cards, right? And this is a reality. And I'm not even saying like, you know, some sketchy 20-something teenager. I'm saying like grandmas, people, just average people who are choosing this. Now, of course, this is just a temporary solution because as we all know, it's going digital. It's going to become a digital passport. But, and it's not my path. I'm not going to use them personally, but I'm not going to fault somebody if they say, Derek, I haven't seen my family in a year. And the only way I can do that is if I get this shot or this test. And I'm not doing either. Can you help me with this? Or do you know somebody who can find this? I don't see a victim. Of course, the state says it's illegal to do that and they'll put you in jail if they catch you. But some people are also like, I hear you guys. I need to exit. I need to build, but I need to pay off my debt first. I'm making a plan first. And so in the meantime, I need to work still. And to do that, I have to fly. So it's either get the shot or do the test. And I don't want either. So I'm going to buy a fake vaccine card, right? People are doing what they need to do already to stay free. And my point here is that as the world increasingly gets more authoritarian, you're going to have to break the law to stay free. What does that look like? That's up for you to decide. But the point is, I want you all to recognize that, look, we should not have guilt for that. They have programmed a lot of things in our head to make us feel like if we break the law, we're doing something wrong. But hopefully everybody here has come to the awareness that just because something's a law doesn't mean it's right. Right? Does everybody understand that? Right? Yeah. Even if they say it's legal, doesn't make it right. This is the government that gave us slavery. This is the government that currently, for those of you who are a little old school and remember this, the NDAA 2012, signed in December 2011 under the Obama administration, re-signed every year by Obama, re-signed every year by Trump, and continued under the Biden administration. Section 1021 and 1022 of the NDAA 2012 says that they can indefinitely detain American citizens who have been suspected of terrorism, extremism. They can indefinitely detain you, hold you without trial, without jury, with access to a lawyer, and they don't have to tell your families anything about where they took you. That's already legal. That's on the books. That's a thing that exists in the United States of America, just waiting for the right person to use it. Nobody's used it yet, as far as we know. Maybe they're using it in small ways we haven't seen yet. The point is, that's what they think is legal. If you follow the government for your moral code, you're going to end up in a bad place. And there are people much brighter than myself who have come before me who have said that good people disobey unjust laws. So hopefully everybody here recognizes that. To maintain freedom, you're going to either have to find workarounds or you're going to have to outright violate their laws in some way. What does that look like? I don't know. But I do know that We need to be proactive about that. In fact, that's why we're focusing on building new systems, right? Because eventually, and this might sound far off, but where we live in Mexico, guys, people are already doing this. Maybe you're like, that's Mexico. It could never happen. Well, it needs to happen here. People who just celebrated 10 years of kicking out the cartels, the cops, the politicians, and governing themselves just celebrated the 10-year anniversary of their uprising in April of this year, a town called Cheran. And their motto during their uprising was ni un paso atrás, not one step back. That's so powerful to me. Just like that's what they were chanting with themselves as they pushed back and they decided they'd had enough. And this has happened in pockets of different places in Mexico. People have just reclaimed their own towns and kicked out the criminals, whether those criminals are cops, government, or whatever. And eventually the state says, you know what? We're going to leave them alone. It's not worth our time to try to go do that. Could that happen here? I hope and pray it will soon enough. And I hope it can happen without violence, because that's what it's going to, that's what's going to have to happen. Now let me continue that thought, guys. Look, because you might at some point have to break the law, we need to push past our programming. We need to get comfortable with things like saying no. Anybody here ever have trouble saying no? Maybe you're not a person who likes confrontation. A lot of us. It's time to let that go. Let's get comfortable saying no. Say it with me. No.
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 No. No, I will not let you come take this child because they're unvaccinated.
No.
No, I will not let you come take this person because they didn't pay your fees on time. That's what it's going to come down to, guys. That's what it's going to come down to. And it doesn't have to be violent. Freedom cells can come together and peacefully assert themselves. Maybe somebody's legally open carrying. You're not coming in here. I'm sorry. You're not welcome in this neighborhood. You need to leave. Until we're ready to get to that point, they will take the kids. They will come take you. They will do that. It's already happening in other places. Again, not here to fearmonger, but also not here to bullshit you like everything's going to go easy. We have to be willing to say no. We have to get comfortable saying no. I want to talk to you about three paths. John kind of illustrated the exit and build one already. I'll just elaborate a little bit. These have to do specifically with physical location. As I said last year, a lot of excited people, a lot of momentum. People were like, we're going to move to Mexico. We're going to move to this city. We want to get out of California. And now we're relaxing and think it's over. It's still time to get momentum going. This first path, though, I think is what some of you here have chosen. It's what I call holding down the fort. And this also kind of goes with what John says as far as build and then exit. So holding down the fort is if you're looking around your community and you feel like, you know what? We've got good activism here. We're growing, you know, community gardens. People are unschooling, homeschooling the kids. We got good spiritual community. Like I've got my tribe here. I'm not leaving. I'm committed here. I'm holding down the fort, whether that's in the city or in the suburbs, wherever it's at. If you're looking around your situation and you feel by choice or circumstance, because I have had people come up to me and say, Derek, well, I really don't want to be here, but I've got this relationship with this person. I can't leave because of my kid, or I have this job. So I'm here. So whether by choice or circumstance, if you're committed to your current area, it's time to get to work. It's time to start connecting with people. It's time to start growing your own food. Or at least, you know, if you got some extra time, put some time in the community garden on the weekend. Put some effort to it. I want to emphasize how this is not going to happen without work. Knowing things are bad is not enough anymore, guys. If it ever was, knowing things are bad is not enough. As I said earlier, you can know things are bad. You can watch all the YouTube channels and listen to all the podcasts and still walk right into their world because you didn't do anything about it. You just talked about it all day. You just were afraid. You were paralyzed. You were too afraid to act because it was uncomfortable, because it was difficult. It's not going to be easy. Holding down the fort. If you're choosing to hold down the fort, get connected with people, whether it's through freedomcells.org or some other mechanism. Again, don't leave tonight without connecting to people. Maybe at the end of this, hey, who's from Katie? Who's from Sugarland? Make sure you make those connections. Don't let tonight be a waste. There's energy. There's potential right here. And we just spent 2 months creating that energy and that potential with people around this country. People are ready for solutions. People are ready for this. Who feels like hold down the fort's the path they're on? Like you feel pretty committed to your local area, wherever that may be at the moment. Got a few hands? Maybe some of us don't really know at the moment, right? Things are kind of, you know, they're sort of all over the place. At the moment, holding down the fort. So if you're holding down the fort, get connected with people, start plugging in. Again, if you're going to fight with activism, whether it's political or lawsuits or running for office, still learn how to grow your own food. Don't be one of these people that assumes when the shit hits the fan that you're all of a sudden going to know what to do with your Patriot supply of seeds and food. You know, you might actually have to open that thing up one day and actually, oh my God, how do you plant this? Like, right? Don't just assume, well, I got 10,000 seeds in the basement, so we're all good to go. Like everything's, I have no idea how to do it. I don't even have any tools, but we'll figure it out. Start now. Put the energy in, right? And I want to emphasize just again, takes effort. Maybe you're hearing this and you're like, Derek, I hear you, man. But I'm working 70 hours a week. My brother works 6 days a week. home to see his family maybe 24 hours a day or less, right? He knows about these things, but where's the time to do anything about it, right? That's where he's coming from. And I empathize with that. I get that. But look, if you have a goal and you have that vision, I'm holding down the fort. I need to protect my family. I know they're going to mandate these shots soon at the schools. I need to start researching homeschool. I know they're going to do something about my job. How can I be an entrepreneur? Is there a better job? Well, you know, what resources are available? You need to start thinking about it proactively. Don't just let it happen to you, right? So in that situation, you're tired as hell. You don't feel like there's extra time, but you do want to get your kids out of school, right? Spend 30 minutes at night before you crash out after your hardworking day. Come home, shower off real quick, spend 30 minutes, just 30 simple minutes doing some research on that homeschooling or that permaculture or whatever it is, or the, you know, taking back your tech. By the end of that week, you just did several hours of research that you wouldn't have done otherwise. You moved the ball forward. That's the kind of practical steps it's going to take. Does that mean you're going to be a little more tired in the morning because you stayed up 30 minutes later? Maybe, but you're moving your family forward. You're moving the ball forward so that in the future, when you find a time to rest, your kids will be free and happy. And you'll know that you put everything you could into these moments. Because again, I believe this is why we're here. I know that this is why I'm here. This is the only thing that makes sense to me. This is, you know, I know that I'm doing what I'm supposed to be doing because of all the amazing, you know, things we're seeing come out of this. I know this is our time, guys. Second strategy, exit and build. Again, this is in terms of physical location. John kind of mentioned this. If you're looking at your current community and there's nothing going on, you don't got any local activism, there's no community gardening, there's no protesting, there's no homeschooling, you can't find another person. And we get these emails. People say, man, I'm checking the Freedom Cell Network and the Telegram groups, and there's literally nobody here. I'm the only one in my home. Sometimes that might be the case. Sometimes you just feel that way. Anybody have that situation? You thought you were alone, then you meet new people and you're like, oh my God, there's all these others, right? Sometimes you just haven't plugged in yet. But sometimes you might be in a situation where there are no other like-minded people with similar goals to you. In those situations, the best bet is to vote with your feet. And again, not always easy, but you might be looking, okay, well, there's nothing going on in my town, but in this town over, they've got all kinds of good stuff happening. People are doing co-educating with the kids, and you know, they're learning more about food, and you know, they're doing stuff that I want to do. I'm going to move over there, take myself and my family, and get plugged in. The other thing is, again, we're in a time-limited situation. Anybody here tried to start activist groups or work in that realm? If you have, you know it's not easy. It takes a lot of energy. Keep yourself motivated. Motivate other people. It's a lot of time, a lot of energy, right? Maybe you feel like you don't have 1 to 2 years to build an activist group up from the ground up right now. Maybe you feel like I'm better served by contributing my skills to this other community. And that's what we're seeing. People are getting the hell out of California. Well, when I asked in California, anybody here holding down the fort? There's 150 people and not a single person raised their hand because everybody's getting the hell out of there. And, you know, so people are deciding, do I want to get out of California? They're all coming to Texas. You need to make sure they don't start turning this into California. You got people coming to Texas, going to Iowa, going to, you know, Arizona, people getting out of New York. People are making moves, right? So that's part of that exit and build strategy. People see greener pastures or better opportunities elsewhere. Doesn't mean you're running away. It just means you're thinking, like, what's the best for you and your family, right? Is it where you're currently at? It might not be. Maybe there's somewhere else. And again, I think those of us who are in proximity to the city of Houston really need to think about that into the future, because as this smart grid continues to pop up in the coming years, I mean, you already basically give up your privacy just by being in the downtown area. For those who are unaware, there are 10,000 plus cameras that have been installed over the last 10 years by HPD, the Department of Homeland Security. They're all connected to a 24-hour real-time data crime center that is constantly scanning us. I mean, you can see them anytime you go around downtown, and it's increasingly expanded. It used to be just 100 in downtown, then it was 1,000. Now at this point, I think they're over 10,000 in the downtown area. So just by coming here, in some ways, we voluntarily give up our privacy, right? That's only going to get more difficult as times go on in the cities. So exit and build is about trying to get out of one place and move to a better place if there's that option. I'll tell you a little bit more in a moment how it goes. Third, thankfully, I believe nobody here has chosen. I want to believe, and I'm praying that everybody here in this room has not chosen this path, and they wouldn't come here tonight and hear all these things and still choose to do nothing. But the third path is what I call apathy is death. Because choosing to do nothing in the face of everything that we were just describing, in the face of, I'm sure you guys could inform me about other things that you know that I don't even know yet, that I haven't even plugged into. In the face of all that, to do nothing, and I don't really know what to describe this stuff other than evil, like psychopaths. Like, I mean, that's where I'm coming from. That's what my research has shown me. These people definitely aren't healthy. Healthy people don't go try to terrorize the world, right? They go take their money and they live off happily and leave people alone. That's not what we're dealing here. If you choose to do nothing, guys, I believe that would be a death. Does that mean they're going to come storm down your house tomorrow and take you away to the FEMA camp? Probably not. Not yet. But I believe doing nothing would be a moral death, a spiritual death, a psychological death, to choose to see this coming. And as I said, to choose to see that these young ones, including my niece and nephews, some of your kids, are 100% depending on us to create something better. To choose to do nothing in the face of that would be a failure, would be a death. Again, thankfully, none of you have chosen that path. Now let's talk a little bit more about exit and build as we wrap up here. Exit and build in terms of how you live your life. This is what John was talking about, what I call the holistic self-assessment, looking at these different areas of your life and trying to see where you can improve. If anything I say offends you in the next couple minutes, take it as a sign that maybe there's an opportunity there. Don't be mad at me. I'm not trying to trigger you, and I'm not here to make that happen, but I do want to encourage you to think. If you feel a little funny by something I say, maybe that means there's some work to be done in that area. I know that I've got more work to do always, ways that I can become more free. Let's talk about in terms of exiting and building from the food system. The food system is unsustainable. We live in Mexico. Most of your food's coming from there. At some point, they might say, you know what? Why are we sending all our food over the border? You know, California's drying up. There's some farms in Texas, some farms on the East Coast here and there, but a lot of it's coming elsewhere. It's an unsustainable system. A lot of people are talking about the supply chain shortages. It's a weak supply chain. You know, one truck can't get here. The next thing you know, the grocery's out of this thing. And it comes slowly. Has anybody been feeling or seeing the inflation? Guys, we just traveled this whole country, and it is everywhere. Everything is up. Like gas prices, hotels, food, everything. And everybody, every city we've gone, everybody's like, yeah, I'm seeing it in my industry. I'm seeing it here. And just 2 days ago, Twitter CEO Jack Dorsey said, hyperinflation is coming to the U.S. Get ready. Does he know something we don't know? Or maybe he's just paying attention to where things are going. He's also invested in Bitcoin, yes. Squarespace. So it could happen. It could continue. I mean, it's already happening, right? But it could get even worse. And the thing about that whole inflation aspect is that, you know, you're still buying the same amount of food you want from your grocery store, but you're getting less, right? So recognizing the problem, what's the solution? We need backyard gardens, front yard gardens, rooftop gardens, vertical gardens, windowsill gardens, community supported agriculture, food shares, co-ops. We need guerrilla gardening. I mean, that's the reality. And again, maybe we're already working. You don't have time to be a full-time gardener. I don't think in this next stage of humanity, we're all going to be gardeners per se. You're going to contribute different skills, but your family would be better served. Take the family and say, hey, kids, we're going to go do a couple of hours of this community garden. We're going to learn a little bit about, you know, working in nature, working with plants. Start gaining those skills. Don't wait for the collapse to start figuring out how to use your seeds. Be proactive. You recognize the system's unsustainable. You recognize that it doesn't align with your values and it's not working. Exit from it and build something better and or support people who are doing it already. For example, the technology. The technology, they're stealing our data. They're using it to monitor us. And the best case scenario, they use it to try to sell you something. And the worst case scenario, they're developing profiles on all of us that are going to be stored forever. I mean, you got to think about that. This digital information is going to be stored. It's already probably stored in the NSA's database in Utah forever. And now at the moment, some of the things you're doing might not be illegal. They might not even be frowned upon, but that data could be used against you in the future. Maybe that, you know, you've seen this already happening. People losing jobs from things they said 10 years ago. And maybe it's a joke that at the time was okay. And now it's not okay. Well, now you're canceled, right? These systems can and will be used against us. There's plenty of reason to be concerned about big tech. I am not a technologist. I am not a software engineer, but I can promote the people who are doing that work like Ramiro, because he's doing such important work there, helping people get off the phone systems, helping them get off Microsoft. Anybody remember Expose Bill Gates Day last year? A couple times we did that. Maybe you've seen James Corbett's documentaries. We were building a movement last year of people questioning Bill Gates. We're out on the streets. We're talking to people. We're passing out flyers. We're spreading the viral meme. And we're doing it on our Microsoft computers, making Bill Gates richer, right? There's a disconnect. We need to connect thoughts, words, and actions more than ever. We need to live in line with our values. That's what this holistic self-assessment and trying to look at these different areas, your food, your economy. How do you make your money? Where do you make it? Where do you spend it? Your relationships, your technology, all these different areas. And again, not to judge anybody, not to say you're living wrong. Why don't you do this? But for you as an individual to say, you know what? I can live more in line with my values. I don't want to just talk about getting out of these systems. I want to actively do it. And you know what? I'm going to have to contact Ramiro because I have no idea what the hell he just said. So you go to Ramiro for technology if you don't have that awareness, if you don't know about how to do those solutions. I certainly don't. I definitely don't know how to change everybody's computers to Linux. I definitely don't know how to create these phones and outfit them with decentralized apps, right? So I lean on people like Ramiro who do have that knowledge and do have that information. The point is looking into each of these different areas of your life, and you could continue to expand. I have here education. A lot of people are homeschooling. A lot of people are unschooling. They're recognizing that that system does not serve them. And I want to make this note. Look, guys, if you just started questioning the education system in the last year, it was crap before the masks. Okay, it's a propaganda center. Go to the pyramidofpower.net. Watch my first episode on big education. Learn the history of the education system. They're meant to be indoctrination centers created by the Rockefeller's General Education Board to create obedient worker bees. And they said in their own words, we're not trying to create doctors, intellectuals, health professionals. We're trying to create people who can punch a clock, right? That's all they care about. The schools were crap before this, okay? So if you have the opportunity, free them from it. This is something I'm trying to work with my sister and my brother with their kids. Again, they have three kids each. I know it's not easy. I'm not sitting here, come on, just pull them out. I know, they're like, I have no idea how to do that. I talked to my sister about this. She needs your help. She needs to plug in with those of you who have the homeschool. Anna, I need you to connect with her and help her. They told her today if she doesn't get her next exemption in time that they're going to take them out of school. So this is what I'm trying to tell her is let's not wait for that. Let's plug you in with Becky and with Anna. Let's help get this transition. This is the kind of real world thing that we need to have happen. I'm trying to help my family. We're trying to help other people to be proactive, right? Because it's going to happen. They're mandating it now for the kids, or they're approving it for the kids. The mandates aren't far behind. So these are the kind of things I'm talking about, right? Look at these different areas. Okay, I'm not in alignment here. Or this is a risk. If I keep the kids in there, they're going to, force it. If I keep working this job, I know they're going to force it. My brother-in-law, same thing. My brother, they're working jobs. They're worried that sooner or later they could be mandated at work. How is he going to feed the three kids? How is he going to feed the family? I don't have all the solutions. I don't have every single answer. But I know the solution is for us to having say, for us to start working with each other locally. I believe that the support system we are building through the Freedom Cell Network and other groups, because now people are traveling using the Freedom Cell Network. We met a woman who caravanned with us back from Mexico to the States. She traveled all the way home to Maryland using the Freedom Cell Network, meeting with other like-minded people that vouched, that contacted me. Do you know her? She's a good person. She stayed with them, got to get plugged into the local community. People are, as I said, meeting people and buying land together on the Freedom Cell Network. Use it in that way. If you're thinking, I don't know if Houston's it for me, what state are you considering? What city are you considering? Check the Freedom Cells on the website or the Telegram. Plug in with those groups. Hey, I'm thinking about moving to town. Can you tell me about the community there? Can you guys tell me what's happening? Use the resources that are here. It's only going to continue to grow because there are going to be more and more people asking these questions, guys, as time goes on. This is just the beginning. It's 2021, 2030. Things will get worse, unfortunately. But the paradoxical thing that's happening, the worse they get, the more of us start asking questions. And I believe in what Miriam and I are trying to do is get ourselves established so that when our families or some of you need help, we can help other people. But if we don't help ourselves, if our foundation's not strong, we're going to be in scarcity mode. And we're going to say, sorry, I can't help you today. Close the door on you, right? I want to be in a position to help as many people as possible. So this whole tour and this talk tonight is just a wave in the red flag. My friends, many of you I know personally, some of you are my family, I care about you. Please think about the direction things are going and think realistically about what it's going to take. The last point I want to make is, again, that in our indigenous communities, we're taught to recognize that the world that we're fighting, the world that we're living in, we're impacting not only those in front of us, but the coming seven generations and beyond, right? Think about that. Me, my child, my grandchild, great-grandchild, and on, right? They're all depending on me. They're not even here yet. I don't even know if they will be. But the other future children, your children, your great-grandchildren, they're depending on us. But also it goes the other way. My parents, my grandparents and great-grandparents and on, people that I never met. I believe I would be failing them if I choose not to act. It is up to us to decide what the seven generations are going to be born into, what that world's going to look like. And also, it's up to us, I think, to uphold the legacy of all of our ancestors. No matter where you came from or where you were born on this planet, all of our ancestors had to struggle and get through some trauma to get us here, right? And I'm not going to let that pass for nothing as far as I'm concerned, right? Yeah. And it's important to recognize, thank you. It's important to recognize, guys, that all of our ancestors had to think ahead to the future to get us here. But now we're in a place where we're so comfortable. The grocery store's there. I guess it'll always be there when I need it. The light switch, it'll just turn on every time I want it to, right? We're so comfortable. Of course, Texas found out last year, can't necessarily depend on the power, right? That's a sign. That means there's an area you need to focus on. I've got some weaknesses when it comes to power. I'm totally dependent on their system. How long would it take for electricity to be tied to a vaccination status, right? These are signs that we need to get out of their systems, right? So if you see the opportunity that is before us, I believe this is why we're here. I believe all of us from the different ages and backgrounds and interests and races and everything else are supposed to come together in one way or another to make it through this. And I do believe only those of us who are most proactive and thinking ahead are going to make it through this. Our ancestors had to think ahead in the past, right? I think about this. My grandmother, we just got to visit her recently. She's 85 years old. She has a farm in Kentucky. She's still harvesting her crops and putting them in cans and putting them in her cellar. She's been doing that since she was a little girl. If she doesn't bale the hay for the cows, then they die during winter, right? All of our ancestors had to think ahead. But now we're at a place where being prepared is a bad thing. You must be some far-right extremist if you have some extra food in your pantry, right? Think about that. They're demonizing the idea that we should be thinking ahead and preparing, but that's what we need more than ever. We need to be proactive. We need to remember our ancestors, and we need to think of the coming generations, my friends, because that is what is dependent on us. I want to invite you in this moment, if you can hear my words, to make a commitment. Make a commitment to yourself, not to me, not to anybody in this room, but to your higher power, to your family, whoever you need to be. Make a commitment in this moment to not let this vision come to pass. They got that vision, right? What does our vision look like? You need to know that vision. I talk about in my book, The Freedom Formula. It's a three-step process. What is your vision of freedom? What are you willing to do to get it? That will be your actual experience of freedom. What does your vision look like? Do you even know? Maybe you have abstract ideas. I want to go off grid. I want to live with my family on a ranch. But have you done any of the research necessary yet? Have you even figured out what permaculture is? Do you even know how to plant a seed? It's going to take some steps between here and there. It's not just going to magically happen. You have to bring it into being. Praying, meditation, manifest is one part of it. But there's action that needs to come into place as well. So you need to know your vision. As deeply as they have their vision of the Great Reset, we need to have our vision. The vision that Miriam and I have, what we're building in Mexico, it's called the Conscious Agora. There's 15 to 20 acres. There's 15 to 16 people, two freedom cells. We've got fresh spring water, fruit trees producing bananas, avocados, limes, pears, apples. There's the free range kids running around, non-GMO, heirloom, organic gardens. We're not trying to create a utopia. We know we can't, but we are emotionally intelligent, emotionally mature people who know that we can handle things that come our way and make it through it and come to agreements and disagreements and be an example for other people. We want to have an education center that can be used as a place that many of you can come to learn. We want this to be a network of free communities all around the world. And not just in my vision, but whatever you bring to vision. And I've spent the last 4 or 5 years deeply thinking about this. Miriam and I got certified in permaculture last year because I need to learn more. I've done some urban farming, but I need more skills. I don't want to just wait till I get the land. I need to get as much skills now so when I get to the land, I can start building right away, right? It takes action. I had the vision. I put everything into it. And now when we go back to Mexico, we're getting very close to getting this piece of land and starting this project and bringing it into existence, right? What is your vision? What are you willing to do to get it? That will be your actual experience of freedom. If you're not willing to be uncomfortable, if you're not willing to push past your fears and your doubts, if you're not willing to learn a new skill or work with new people, it might be pretty difficult. You got to push past those things. Make a commitment right now in this moment to not let their vision come to pass. Get to know your vision. Spend some time writing down, what does freedom really mean to you? What does that look like? Are you on the land? Are you in the city? Are you living with other families? Do you have your own property? Are y'all sharing property? What does it look like? Know it deeply, put everything you got into it, and you can manifest it. Nothing short of committing to that, guys, is going to stop what's happening. The final point I'll make, and I should have said this earlier, is I don't know that we can stop the Great Reset. I'm not here necessarily tonight to tell you that we're going to stop it. I think we can slow it and push back in different ways. But again, they spent trillions of dollars and generational familial planning into this. And in some ways, it needs to happen for us to wake the heck up, right? Yeah. It's like we're almost willing it to being so we can wake up. But, and also, here's another Hollywood myth. There's no easy way out of this. There's no ring of power to throw into the lake of fire and it's over. There's no single computer, smash it, the Great Reset's over. That's all BS. It's structural. Our problems are much bigger. They're going to take more effort, more time. There's no single way. I don't know that we can stop it, but I believe we can survive and thrive through it, guys. And it's only going to come if we commit to making a better world. Thank you guys so much for your time. I want to end with my positive affirmation. If you'll join me, I appreciate your patience. I know it's past 10. I'm going to still jam some music if you want to hang out with me. And we're still live over there. I appreciate John and his crew for being with us. Please give them a round of applause. They've been filming and streaming tonight. Hey, guys,
If you resonate with this affirmation, please repeat it after me. This is something that I started using when I was in prison. It came to me way back then. It stayed with me just through tough times. If these resonate with you, please feel free to repeat after me. I am powerful. I am beautiful. I am free. Thank you, guys. I'm going to...